Thanks for downloading the Ira Kaufman podcast. It's a little different kind of episode today, as you'll hear coming up, but all of Ira's episodes are presented by Ed Morse Cadillac Tampa and Ed Morse Cadillac Brandon. Save on Escalade models up to $17,000 off at Ed Morse Cadillac Brandon. Those are 2019 models. You can get all the details at edmorsecadillacbrandon.com. They're right there on Causeway Boulevard, so easy to get to. General Manager Hector LeBron is a friend of the podcast. Also, the Memorial Day sales continue there. They are open all weekend long. The last 2018 Cadillac XTS models, $15,000 off MSRP. All the details, edmorsecadillacbrandon.com, edmorsecadillacbrandon.com. And just west of 275 on Fletcher, Ed Morse Cadillac Tampa. Everything is backed by Morse. You get their price protection promise and join over 1 million satisfied customers. It's actually 1.2 million and beyond have been taken care of, great care of, by Ed Morse dealerships across the state of Florida. 2019 XT4 available for lease, $319 per month. All the details at edmorsecadillactampa.com, edmorsecadillactampa.com. You're going to see Ira out there soon picking up his new Cadillac. If you did not catch the last Ira Kaufman podcast, you can catch up on all your Ed Morse excitement, iTunes, Podbean, Google Play. So go ahead and subscribe there. It's all free. And here we go. All right. Welcome to the Ira Kaufman podcast featuring the sage of Tampa Bay sports. And while Ira will be on this podcast, this is a rarity. The sage is not here for the opening. We did a little recording in advance. I am here, Steve Isbitz, with Lee DeCamper. So we're going to grab the reins, or shall we say the steering wheel, from Ed Morse Cadillac Tampa and Ed Morse Cadillac Brandon, Ira's proud supporters, and carry the load here, Lee, till we get to Ira a little bit later in the podcast. How's it going, man?
Whirlwind of activity this week, hasn't there been?
Crazy week for Bucks fans, and I would encourage everybody who enjoys the podcast, this is our third one of the week. The way things shook out last week, we sort of, I'd say, temporarily suspended the podcast for a day to keep our thoughts with Steve Dumig and his family, the big dog who passed away, but we are making that up this week. So if you haven't listened to the first two podcasts this week, they're available for you at iTunes, Google Play, Podbean, and right at joebucksfan.com, other platforms. You can subscribe. It's free, and you can listen anytime. But this is our third one of the week, busy weekly, and we got to get right to it. But we had a wild 24 hours there. Gerald McCoy fired, and this baloney the Bucks threw out there, mutual parting of the ways, is a bunch of crap, as we know. But doesn't mean McCoy didn't want to leave at some point, and the Bucks were done with him. But, you know, if they were paying him $13 million, he'd still be here, and that's that. But and then, of course, the signing of Ndamukong Suh less than 24 hours later. Your thoughts on McCoy getting out of here?
I don't think bad teams should be getting rid of good players, and I know there's the hysterical crowd out there that they think the Bucks would be better off with Neely and Keem Spence and that ilk. You and I talk to NFL people, and whenever we bring up that, you know, Bucks fans think McCoy is terrible, they look at us like, you know, we have 8 ears or something, and we just fell off a tree. Here's the thing. I know people thought McCoy bad attitude, or they didn't like his attitude, they didn't like his personality. But you know what? He produced. And the Bucks have an awful pass rush. Suh is less of a pass rusher than McCoy is. I can't even say I'm lukewarm about this deal. I just earlier this year, before the draft, I was of the mind that you trade for Dee Ford, could have got him for a second round pick. You draft a defensive lineman in the draft. Ed Oliver was there for the taking. Via Ed Oliver, Dee Ford, JPP, you're cooking with gas. The Bucks obviously had their heart set on Devin White. Come hell or high water, they were going to get Devin White. Now with JPP's situation, we don't even know if he's going to play this year. With JPP's situation, I thought they should somehow found a way to keep McCoy or trade for Leonard Williams. Apparently, the Jets want to get rid of Williams. Bowles is a fan, Todd Bowles, Bucks defense coordinator. He's a fan of Leonard Williams. Apparently, Williams liked him. He's in a final year of a contract. Apparently, the Jets want to get rid of him. I thought that was a match made in heaven. Perfect timing. Apparently, the Bucks think otherwise. to this point, they think otherwise. Who knows? Maybe they still trade for the guy. I don't know. But that's what I would have done before I would have got Sue and got rid of McCoy. But the deal's done. It's over with. Time to look forward. I'm just not sold on Sue.
Yeah, it's interesting, Lee, because I don't hear anybody saying that Gerald McCoy isn't worth $6, $7, $8 million.
Sure.
It's just that he wasn't worth 13, and I think everybody knows that around the league, and he won't get $13 million. Wednesday morning, I was up early listening to Ian Rappaport on local radio, and he said Sue is going to earn $9 million from the Bucks, just around $9 million with, you know, it'll be some incentives that could get it up to 10, which that's a good discount for a team in salary cap hell from McCoy to Sue for $3-4 million less. But I don't see the upgrade here. I really don't. It's different. I think it'll be an upgrade in the locker room from the sense that it'll be nice to have some different energy there as they try to reshape the whole framework of the team, the whole attitude of the team. But beyond that, you know, he's not a better pass rusher than McCoy.
No.
And he may be more active. He may be a more consistent player when he gives the effort. But that's the problem with Sue. Everybody you talk to, from the experts on NFL radio, Bill Polian and beyond, and even Rappaport, was saying, you know, that was the scuttlebutt out of L.A. all year last year, was the guy takes plays off. Now, we know what that looks like in Tampa, guys taking plays off. So I'm not that scared
Hello,
of that.
Hello, Deshaun.
You can be productive and take some plays off, but it feels like a weird fit because Arians, no matter what he says, even though he says, you know, reload, not rebuild, he's still trying to build his whole system and his whole accountability culture. And he talks about that accountability sheet that comes out every day and after every game. You know, if Sue's going to take plays off, you think Arians is going to give him a pass?
I agree. From what we understand behind the scenes, the offense is humming with Arians. That's a good fit. It's a smooth transition. Defense, that's a different animal. And I'm sure there are some underlying factors as to why they got rid of McCoy that just don't show up in a box score. I don't know what all those are. But from what we can hear, that defense needed an attitude adjustment and needs an attitude adjustment. Now, when I say that, people always say, oh, Sue, you know, and I've written this before. I've said this before. Fans like cartoon characters. That's why Chucky was popular. That's why Sapp was popular. Okay, Sue might stomp on someone's arm. To me, that didn't mean a damn thing when it comes to stopping a run or stopping a quarterback, stopping a pass. That doesn't mean a damn thing. You know, you can get all the flags you want by being like an ass. That doesn't do anything for your defense.
Yeah, and to me, Lee, some of the stuff that's silly about that is
beyond silly.
Well, it's beyond silly for even an extra reason is that the whole Sue thing with his attitude and antics or whatever, the guy hasn't missed a game since 2011.
That's true.
So he's not getting suspended for any of this stuff. Mm-hmm. He's not leading the league in personal fouls that I ever heard. Didn't that go to Ryan Jensen last year? Didn't he lead,
all
offensive players, I think, in personal fouls? So, you know, I think the whole Sue stuff is really overblown. He largely was viewed as a pretty good teammate in Miami. There's stuff I'm going to put on Joe Bucks fan, something I wrote years ago on that when the Bucks played Miami. And he's not the guy he was when he came into the league, face stomping and spitting and kicking or what, you know. He's a different guy. He's 32 years old. And, you know, I think he's a more active guy in many ways on the line of scrimmage. But I still think it's almost a wash. And frankly, you know, Gerald McCoy, I think the final tally was maybe 11 defensive line coaches in his career.
Yeah.
The guy never had the benefit of some consistent coaching. I would have loved to see what Casey Rogers would have done with Gerald McCoy versus what was here before. But still, I don't think the Bucs got better. They just got a little bit different. And
they may have gotten better in the locker room.
It'll be exciting. You know, it's fun for fans. I mean, we're fans on top of everything else. And I'm dying to watch Sue play. But I go back, Lee, to forget about what fans think and what we think. The players take a lot of pride and care a lot about that captain vote.
Yeah.
The players care. Yeah. And for some reason, last year, Gerald McCoy, after years of being a captain, years of being everybody's mentor as a rookie and taken, he once took his defensive line to the Pro Bowl, all expenses paid, to thank them. He used to take the team out to dinner, all kinds of stuff, and they voted him out as captain. And that was such a red flag last year from an internal team standpoint. I think they really just needed to move on.
Yeah, I guess. Like I said, I just don't believe in bad teams getting rid of good players. What was Raheem Morris's famous line? I'll tolerate you until I can replace you. If Sue's a replacement, okay, it's a lateral replacement. Yeah. I don't think they got better.
And I agree with that, too. I'd much rather have McCoy than Bo Allen, Will Golston, and Vernon Hargraves.
Yeah. Well, there's an interesting one. Now, Aaron's kind of swimming backwards a little bit on Vernon Hargraves. He's never had any mental issues. He's baloney. The week prior, in front of all the Penn and Mike Club, he said, direct quote, Hargraves has to get mentally ready for practice. That's why he sat out. And a week later, it's all rainbows and puffy white clouds and sunshine. That was some serious backstroking there.
As our friend, the late Steve Dumig, would say, total bull spit.
Yeah.
And, frankly, Lee, I know some fans like this and some fans don't. We're both very confident saying that behind the scenes, it's a train wreck situation with Hargraves.
Yeah.
At least as it sits right now, maybe it can be fixed, but the guy's not the kind of Buccaneer I think most fans would like to have.
No NFL team would like to have.
Exactly.
If what we heard is true.
Yeah.
Now, we can't verify, but the people we've talked to, we trust. And it's nothing illegal, just bad attitude.
Yeah, just bad attitude.
People think McCoy's got a bad attitude. McCoy is freaking sap compared to what we heard.
What do you mean? Is that good or bad?
Oh, no, good as far as, sap was the ultimate team guy.
Right.
Bust your tail.
Yeah.
What we heard is, no NFL coach would want this attitude on their team.
Yeah.
Especially around a bunch of young secondary guys, too.
I believe what we heard, Lee, and I believe what we were told, and I know what Arians said. Well, I was the guy who asked him the question about Hargraves. Arians has been doing this a long time. He understands what you say and why.
And when.
And what the message is and when. And I think the Bucs have just cut ties with Hargraves right now. You'll pick your spot on a trade. Somebody will take a flyer on him. But his option, his fifth-year option next year, only if he makes the roster, that fifth-year option is going to be about $9 million. He's just not going to be that guy that you want here for $9 million.
And that's sad because you figure a guy playing for his hometown team wouldn't just mail it in like he's doing. That he'd be motivated, show some pride. Apparently that's not the case.
All right, so we'll leave it right there. Now, the sage of Tampa Bay sports, Mr. Ira Kaufman, who I believe is on the beach right now. We'll get a couple of good stories out of that. And we appreciate all the Ira fans for a stretch there, Lee. Maybe about a good seven-hour window. Ira was back on the top 50 all subjects, Google Play podcasts, even ahead of his beloved Nancy Grace. And then he faded away. But then that's the way it goes. It's real time. But it's still quite an honor, all subjects, for him to do that. Now, his latest column, Lee, talks about the overhaul. His Wednesday column, if you hadn't read it, it's right there on Joe Bucks Fan, presented by Ed Morris Cadillac Tampa and Ed Morris Cadillac Brandon. Ira sort of goes into, look, we got a whole new starting defensive line coming this year. Quan Alexander's gone. Conti can't even stay in the NFL. Ryan Smith's a nobody. We just talked about Hargraves. Justin Evans, who I shared that I was very leery about last week on the podcast, he might be replaced. He might not be healthy enough to go.
Well, we're hearing good things so far. And again, it's underwear football.
Yep.
We're hearing good things about Edwards. We're hearing good things about Whitehead. We're not hearing anything good, unfortunately, about Justin Evans. Justin Evans is a good dude. And by the way, we did a pretty nice job cutting apart Hargraves. He's always been cool with us. It's just what we hear behind the scenes going on in practices in the meeting rooms.
Yeah.
Justin Evans, one of my favorite players, but dude, you got to get on the field. Yeah, it's not looking good. All the signs point thumbs down with Justin Evans.
Yeah, it's a 6-month toe injury at this point, and it's just not a great situation. But we have heard great things about Edwards, and like you said, look, this the offense. I don't want to just gloss over the positive. The offense we're hearing is doing very well.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought it was very tellingly when I asked Arians the other day, because I think it's funny because a lot of fans like when we talk about the media. you and I are asking questions because we really care what's going on. We want to know what's going on. I think other media is looking. They're playing a different game. I don't know.
Yeah, they do.
I can't put it into words. One day I'll think it through.
Yeah, I don't know if it's bad, but yeah, we're coming at it with different philosophies, different angles.
It's not bad. It's just a different approach to covering a football team. And so I asked Arians, you know, you watched 3 days worth of film, right? Because we only get to attend one practice. So there were three last week, and then they go and watch the film. I asked him, you watched 3 days of film. What's standing out there? And he mentioned Ronald Jones and some other guys. And then I asked him, look, you've installed your offense around the league, different places. Is this team a quick study? What's the deal? And I thought it was very encouraging that he said that they are an extremely quick study and that usually they have on both fields this accountability sheet, which is basically screw-ups. And they've at times in past years have had a 3-page list of screw-ups by now. And he said the Bucs are only at a 1-page list, and that's a testament to how quickly they're learning. And to me, that's a huge nod to Jameis, because if the offense is doing it right, I mean, Jameis is a huge part of that.
Well, we also have to factor in Gabbert knows the offense.
Yep.
So that's a good thing. So, but yeah, it's everything we're hearing about the offense. It's been a very smooth transition. It's very smooth, very encouraging.
And a lot of work. Haven't heard the greatest things about. People like to hear about the rookies. You know, Scotty Miller still a little green in the offense, to be expected, of course. And, maybe he can fit in later on once they really get the pads on. And I think, Lee, sometimes if you get a guy that small and he shows up and you put him in shorts and a T-shirt, he looks extra small.
Yeah.
And it's probably not fair to him, but maybe coaches get a little scared by that or freaked out. And, of course, he's, 21 years old on top of that.
He actually looks like a busboy at Hooters.
Yeah, they're usually kind of a skinny, nondescript kind of guy.
Yeah.
As we sit here at Hooters on Hillsborough Avenue, another proud sponsor of JoeBucksFan.com. But we've heard good things about the offense. And, I was on Rock Riley's show this morning, Lee, on 8:20 a.m.
You had a busy morning, Rock. Dude.
I did. Rock texted me. I'm like, yeah, sure. So he asked me about Ronald Jones, if I thought Arians was just blowing a lot of smoke about Jones looking so good. Before I give you what I told Rock, what do you think?
Well, I think, like me, you have seen some plays Ronald Jones has made. Granted, it's underwear football. We get it. Where that was not apparent at all last year when he was a rookie. I for example... Now, granted, it's just one play, but it was in a facility last week. You know, the Glazer Dome. I call it the Glazer Dome. One play, he caught a short pass. First off, he caught a short pass. Was it plus one in internet lingo, plus one? Then he turns around and he kicks in the jets and just slices through the defense. No jukes, no jumps, no sidesteps, just kicked into jets like a 100-yard dash and boom, split the defense. I'm like, wow, he looks like an NFL player. I never saw that last year. Not once last year did I see him make any kind of play, underwear football, pads in practice or training camp, whatever. Not once did I see him make a play. And you said, you know, this guy belongs already. Granted, again, underwear football, I've seen him do that. So... baby steps. We're encouraging.
You know, and it's kind of silly that we're even going here, but I remember writing up maybe twice last spring and summer of some good plays he made. Practice. I mean, it's totally different.
Underwear where you can't hit.
Or even if, you know, the Bucs under Dirk Cutter, they didn't tackle to the ground in practice, and it was like an 80% hit.
You wonder, and I have no idea what Arians is going to do when they put the pads on. Do you think that was a factor at all in just how thoroughly atrocious the defense was last year? That in practice they never brought guys to the ground. Therefore, once a week you're expected to do that, whereas during the week you don't practice that.
I don't, you know, maybe look, Derek Brooks has talked about this many times. The way NFL teams practice, the tackling kind of sucks for the first few weeks of every season around the league. It's just the only way to get ready to tackle is to tackle. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if it's a Bucs-specific thing. Not every team is hitting. And so it's hard for me to say. But I look at And I go back and watch these games a lot because I just enjoy watching the NFL on my computer. It's just, you know, beautiful. Fast forwarding and everywhere.
Yeah. Game Pass.
Game Pass. Beautiful thing. So you go back, you look at that Pittsburgh game, second half, they shut out the Steelers. Okay, not easy to do. The Steelers' offense was humming. They shut them out in the second half. If you can do that, that shows that you could do it. It was a level of inconsistency and non-responsiveness to coaching that if you could shut out the Steelers for a half, you shouldn't be the worst defense in the league going forward.
Not just that, and you're absolutely correct there. But the previous season, they had the Patriots bogged down. Justin Evans got his first pick. McCoy had at least one sack, I know, of Brady. The defense played exceptional. I don't know if it's Monday night football, prime time at home, but they showed they could have done it. But as you say, you know, the perfect word was inconsistency. Just terrible.
Yeah, very, very inconsistent. You know, the McCoy thing, as far as where he ends up, by the time people listen to this podcast, he might have a new team. I hope it's fun. I hope whatever it is, it's fun. Mm-hmm. If he plays against the Bucks, if he goes to the Saints, that'll be a lot of fun. Mm-hmm. And if he ends up with the Browns on a high-profile team, what an opportunity that is for McCoy to showcase himself, to prove himself that he's a star or a dud. You know, it's strange times in Buckville here, Lee.
A Bucks fan tweeted us, and he made a point about McCoy and Sue. He confessed that the Bucks probably did not get it better with the swap, a virtual swap of McCoy and Sue. But he also added, you know what? The defense could not have gotten worse than last year. Could not have gotten worse. And, you know, the first half of the season before Mike Smith got fired, that's absolutely correct. Could not have gotten worse. So that's one way to look at it. You know, we were talking to a Bucks super fan this morning. I'm not going to mention his name, but he's like a super fan, just consumes anything he can get his hands on, his eyes on, his ears on with the Bucks. He can't get enough Bucks information. You know, he said it's smelling like instead of the Bucks getting beat by 18 points every Sunday, now they're aiming to get beat by 10 points every Sunday, which is an improvement.
It's harsh. Look, the fans are beaten down. Too much losing, too much pain. There's a lot of optimism, but a lot of skepticism. But that's why I think the schedule plays out so well for the Bucks because they should be able to win 2 out of 3.
Even though it was all that, five games in a row?
Yeah, because at least they can get a good start, right? If you can't beat the Niners and the Giants at home, then you have serious problems.
Mm-hmm. And then you're playing for the draft.
And you know what? If they're 2-1, people will soften. The fans won't
sure.
be. They won't be on edge. The players won't be wondering, do we suck again? It sets them up to at least have a more competitive mindset.
With that said, wouldn't that be a repeat of last year with that, you know, that road schedule right in the middle? You go to 2-1, next thing you know, you're looking at a top 5 draft pick.
Yeah, well, that's the Bucks. That's why we are where we are. Tom Moore, the legendary, renowned quarterback coach and guru, he's in with the Bucks now. He's in the click. And you spotted him at practice yesterday with Arians. Moore is 80 years old. Arians worked with him in Indianapolis. I don't know if he worked with him before, but I think it was just Indy with Peyton Manning.
And the Cardinals. They brought him to Arizona.
Right, right. So the skeptic or the cynic says, how many freaking coaches does Jameis need? He's got the quarterback whisperer. He's got Leftwich, who played the game, played in the system. He's got Clyde Christensen, who Arians says is a great mechanics guy and knows how to push the buttons with a quarterback. And now he's got Tom Moore. You know, I don't know who gets to talk to Jameis, like, you know, but what excuse does Jameis have now? He's got Tom Moore in the mix.
Yeah, you almost start to think, are there too many cooks in the kitchen? You're almost starting to think that. But whenever I think about that, I say to myself, make no mistake, Arians is coaching up Jameis. That's Leftwich is just doing the marching orders. I was listening to NFL Radio, Sirius XM NFL Radio, Tuesday night. And Alex Marvez, he gave us a shout-out. He talked about Tom Moore and asked Bill Polian about Moore. Obviously, Polian, Hall of Fame general manager. He worked with Moore in Indianapolis as well. I never remember hearing Polian go over the top in his praise of anyone, with the possible exception of Peyton Manning, like he did Tom Moore. Just went on and on. What a you know, this guy is the ultimate quarterback guy, the ultimate offense guy. There may not be anyone better alive that knows offense. I mean, just went on and on. And then he talked a little bit about Jameis. He said basically Jameis is not a leader, which I think we've all come to that. You know, having said that, Polian said there's no doubt Jameis has ability. His problem, we all know it, is consistency. And Polian talked up Jameis's ability. He's got it. He goes, he's got ability. I've seen it. He's got it. Polian came right out and said, you got Bruce Arians, you got Tom Moore, you had Dirk Cutter. If Jameis can't be fixed with those guys, he cannot be fixed. So I think the Bucs are going to have a decision at the end of the season. Is Jameis the guy? I think they will have their answer. Is Jameis the guy or is he not?
Well, you know, I was listening to Ross Tucker on the air the other day, you know, the former offensive lineman who's now, he seems to work for everybody. Anyway, Ross Tucker said that he doesn't think there'll be an answer with Jameis at the end of the year. Mm. He has a feeling that Jameis is going to be a 31-touchdown guy this year with maybe 16 picks, and the turnover issues won't go away, but he'll be successful, and the Bucs might go 6-10, and here they are again, and everybody will be saying, well, you know, Jameis threw for 31 touchdowns. It's a top 11 offense, and, you know, is it really his fault? And I think they probably will be in that boat if I had to guess.
I got a phone call a couple weeks ago. Someone from has access to inside the organization. I'll just say that. And I've been wanting to talk about this on a couple of podcasts, but, you know, things came up. You know, Steve Dumig's passing, Sue, GMC, other stuff. And this guy was talking about Jameis. He said, think about it. He goes, when Lovey had Jameis as a rookie, and he did pretty well as a rookie, looked like they had their guy, the way he played as a rookie. This guy told me Lovey ordered Cutter. You are not to put Jameis in any position that will embarrass himself. James had a pretty good rookie year. Now, Ira has, I don't know if I can say this now. Ira walks around standing at attention about Charles Sims and how the Bucs 3 years ago ran the ball. And I told him that's because Lovey forced Cutter to do it. And, well, this guy basically confirmed what I've been saying. You know, Cutter was under orders. Cutter was not the head coach. He was under orders. So I thought that was interesting, number one. Number two, and this is backed up by Cutter himself, the second year when Cutter took over for Lovey, I think it was answering one of your questions. Cutter said that he's not spending as much time with Jameis as he wanted to because he had other responsibilities. And the previous season, since he was offensive coordinator, he spent a lot of time with Jameis. This guy said, you don't think it's a cause and effect there? Fair point. This guy also said, because Cutter was distracted, and this is something I talked about more than a couple times, but Jay King was basically running with that offense. Monken was basically focused on the wide receivers, which Cutter also said, and even Monken said his orders from Cutter was, fix Mike Evans. So Monken was focused on wide receivers, even though he was, quote-unquote, offensive coordinator. He was focused on wide receivers. Cutter was being head coach, but Jay King was basically a de facto offensive coordinator working with Jameis. And as I've stated many times before, what has Bajakian ever done? Unless you count Dan LeFever as a going example, the guy knew was football. I liked Bajakian, but his resume was very thin. And that was another one. And then, obviously, this past year, Monken was told, you're taking over the offense by Cutter. And look what happened. You know, Jameis, I'm not saying that in a good way. You know, first off, Jameis was screwed up with the suspension. But both him and Fitzpatrick, well, they're the top-ranked offense. Our passing offense, I should say. That's because Monken was fully involved, and Monken obviously knows what he's doing. So I just thought that was interesting. That was, again, coming from a gentleman that has access to the inside of One Buck Pass.
Sure, yeah, I mean, there's a lot of ways to look at it. You know, I think the way the Glazers might look at it is, all right, you know.
You've been here 3 years.
Last year, Jameis, there was a whole suspension mess.
Yes, who probably never recovered.
And he came back, and he was horrible, and then he bounced back. But terrible year last year for Jameis on all fronts. And the year before, some people will tell you he was hurt for the whole season except for three, four games. So a lot of different ways to look at it. But I think they'll look at the Glazers will say, all right, you had the two wacky years. You had the promising couple of years to start. We got the best coaches in here. He's 25 years old. This is it. And I wouldn't blame them for wanting to.
Alexis Napoleon basically said the same thing. You'll have your answer.
You would think. But we know in Bucks world, it's not that easy. Now,
in Bucks world, the bizarre is the norm.
Now, we sat down with the Sage to talk about some of his memories with the dean of Tampa Bay Sports Radio, Steve Dumick. They had a relationship going back years. And, you know, let's get to that. All right, Ira, we wanted to give you your shot to share some memories of the big dog, Steve Dumick, a sports radio icon in town, who passed away last week, was doing his thing for 20-plus years. And you guys had an interesting relationship, you know, peers, you know. And
I think we were born the same year. Same year.
And you were on with him every year for many years as the Hall of Fame voter during Super Bowl week. And you would have been on a lot more often, but there were contractual relationships with the Tampa Bay Times. You worked for the Tribune, messy stuff. But, you know, I know you knew him from other places as well. I'm sure you saw him at spoke to him many times at Lightning games for your stretch there. And so, you know, I'll just leave it, throw it open to you. You have what are your strong memories? What do you want to say to the people at Tampa Bay?
Well, Lee, every year the Trib would send me to the Super Bowl. And, you know, Steve got very comfortable at Radio Row. I don't know if you've ever seen him set up on Radio Row.
Oh,
but
I was with him at Radio Row a couple times. Yeah.
He would get in like Saturday or Sunday, stay the whole week. He'd find a bar that he wanted to hang out at. And he knew everybody on Radio Row. There's a guy, Nestor, from Baltimore. He wrote something on Twitter after Steve passed.
Oh,
very,
he did.
Very nice remembrance. But I always look forward to that sit-down with Dumick. You guys know that usually, you know, he'd put a guest on and the guest would get one segment, maybe two. Well, I took it as a great point of pride. He'd keep me on a half an hour, 45 minutes. He loved talking about, you know, Sapp, Brooks. Of course, he'd ask me when all starts getting into Canton. Rondé. And, of course, he knew his football. Of course, he knew his football. Steve mentioned the Lightning. I covered the Lightning for 2 years. They were terrible. Late 90s, early 2000s, Bill Davidson owned the team. They had a coach named Steve Ludzik, who wasn't very popular. The team was terrible. I mean, it was really bad. And Dumick would talk hockey, and I'd listen to him. You know, one point that you guys are making in your own podcast with your remembrances is very true, and I can vouch for it. A lot of times on a Wednesday after a Lightning game on a Tuesday and, you know, one of these bad teams, another 4-1 loss, and Dumick would go crazy, you know, as he should. This is a team that would win like 20 games out of 80. They'd win 20. They'd lose 47. And they'd have 13 ties. That's back when they had ties. You know, so they'd win 20 out of 80. Yeah, that's bad. Yeah. And so Dumick would go crazy. And then you knew that he got a phone call that night. That very night, he got a phone call. And the general manager at the time, the president, was Ron Campbell. Dudley was the GM. And he would talk about it. You know, now he'd come back on Thursday. And he'd say, you know, I heard from the Lightning. And you know he wasn't lying.
Yeah.
Some guys say that, they're lying. But he wasn't lying. Everybody was listening to what the guy said. They'd all react. And you know what? Look, you tell me if I'm going too far about this. I don't think I am. But Dumick in his heyday, the reason the clubs paid so much attention to the big dog day after day was they got a taste of what the fans were thinking, and he affected how the fans were thinking. And I believe that in its own way, the Joe Bucks fan has picked up that mantle a little bit.
That's because, what he thought.
Because we know that people that count in our business listen and read Joe Bucks fan. And if they're doing it to get a gauge on what the fans think, so be it. That's fine. We get a lot of comments. I know you guys do. Not all complimentary, but that's fine. We live with that, too. Steve mentioned the phrase, set the agenda. He did set the agenda. Now, you saw my tweet, Steve. I think, Lee, it was Thursday afternoon after you told me that that he had passed away, and I was at a somber service for a family member. What I wrote was, you don't rule the Tampa Bay airwaves for a quarter of a century by accident. he knew what he was doing. I didn't agree with him a heck of a lot of times, but he knew what he was doing. Mm-hmm. And here's my example, Steve. Here's my best example. Who would have the cojones to take on Joe Maddon day after day in the days when the Rays were winning 90 freaking games?
He would, too.
He was killing the guy.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, the shift, the way he was using his pitchers. And I would listen to it, and maybe you guys too, and say, Doom's out of his mind. What the hell? Why is he picking on Joe Maddon? And you know what he would kill him with? The cockatoos in the locker room and the outfits when they would take the road trips.
He would.
Doomic would go crazy. And I would
he called a dress up.
Yeah, and I would listen up. And say to myself, Steve, the guy's in first place. He's no dummy. And I got to know Maddon. He ain't no dummy.
No.
You know, you guys know him. Look what he's doing in Chicago. They're going to win that division again this year. Who else would take on Joe Maddon? But you know what, Steve? That's good radio. That's good radio. Everybody, who else was going to do it?
No
one. He was a voice in the wilderness. That's good radio.
Well, there was one thing to that, the whole Joe Maddon stuff, and there were many layers to how he handled players and giving guys days off and all sorts of different things.
Didn't they arrange a meeting between him and Maddon?
That's the thing. Eventually, after years, finally, Doomig was summoned to Rays headquarters. He spent a day.
Rick Vaughn set it up.
Okay.
Spent a day with Maddon going over film and going over video of guys hitting and sequences. I talked to Steve about this in great detail. Well, what happened when you went with Maddon? And they just got into deep baseball for hours and hours and hours. And Maddon really wanted to, you know, say his piece. And I had enough already. And Doomig did lay off him after that. He gained a lot of respect for Maddon after that. And he laid off him a little bit. Not completely by any stretch, but it did change the whole thing.
Is this your way of saying you want a private film session with Bruce Arians?
No, they haven't played yet. I got nothing to say about Arians. But you know what? It made a difference, and I don't know why it didn't happen sooner, but it was pretty cool that they did that.
When they had that meeting, Doomig actually brought a peace pipe of sorts.
See, now that's good stuff.
And you know what that was? It was a
bottle of wine?
No, even better. It was like a half dozen Delco sandwiches. Philly cheesesteaks.
Ah, that's right.
You know,
Doomic
talked about sports nobody else cared about. Mm-hmm. And he didn't mind doing it. Mm-hmm. Like European soccer. Doomic was a soccer player. He mm-hmm. grew up playing it in Philly. He would talk about horse racing. Of course, he would talk about hockey at a time when the Lightning stunk and nobody wanted to talk about the Lightning. He would do it. So he was savvy. He was savvy.
Well, he wasn't afraid to talk hockey when the team started when, 95?
96, I think.
So I got here.
On 92 they started. 92.
I got to the Bay Area the end of 90, very end of 94, like December 94.
They made the playoffs in 96.
And I remember how much he used to talk hockey. No problem talking about something that really wasn't popular at all.
And him and Phil Esposito developed a strong friendship.
I'm not going to say Doomic got a little lucky, but he got a little lucky that the 96 Lightning were such a big hit. And the buzz around selling out the Thunderdome and biggest crowd ever. I mean, there was a lot of buzz for the Lightning. So, you know, Doomig talking hockey early sort of paid off for him because he became the authority when it was the hot thing. Mm-hmm. And if those Lightning stunk, he might have just been the guy talking about what nobody cares about.
Did he say if they draft Jameis Winston, I'm done with them or something?
He came close. Yeah, he didn't want Jameis. Now, he met Jameis, and they kind of get to be sort of acquaintances, but he didn't.
But then he ended up warming up to the guy.
A little bit.
He warmed up a little bit. Jameis warmed up. Jameis went on his show right away, and they had the famous line, "Anything for you, big dog."
He came in before he was drafted. He came into Tampa, and basically what the team, the Bucks, were doing was try to get him acclimated to the Tampa Bay Area, but more so get the Tampa Bay Area acclimated to him, because obviously he had that baggage and still does. And so it was kind of a PR move, and Doomig just happened to meet him, ex-Bucks, including All-Star. Like, yeah, we'll help the guy out. We'll bring him in for a fundraising dinner. And so a lot of ex-Bucks decided that they were going to be PR people. You know, they told the Bucks, like, yeah, we'll welcome Jameis. We'll bring him in. We'll get him together. At any rate, at that function, it was all-star function. It was private. he went there, and that's where Steve met Jameis, and they kind of hit it off right away. And but Steve didn't win. But I'm going to say something what you were making a point of, and I've got a confirmation. You know, you said how Steve would always hear from the Lightning, or he would hear from other heavy hitters with teams. I can't remember the incident or the specifics, but I remember I was talking to Mark Domenech, you know, former Bucks Rockstar general manager. He was the general manager at the time. I don't know what was going on, and Steve was having a conniption, just going crazy for days in a row. And I just happened to be talking to Domenech at one buck, and I can't remember what it was about, but Domenech says, "I got to call him and settle him down." I got to call Steve and settle him down.
Wasn't he a supporter of Domenech? I also heard about his altercation the other day. Somebody was telling the story about, you know, him and Scott Brantley got into it.
Sure.
Brantley's not doing so well either.
No, he's not.
No, they've had the benefits for him. Sage, I was wondering, do you remember when Dumig had that TV commercial?
Yeah.
Over Trent Dilfer's grave. You remember that? That was a big thing in town.
I don't think I remember that.
That's when Tony Dungy said, "I'll have nothing to do with Steve Dumig after that."
Let me hear about it.
There was a television commercial for the radio station.
What station?
It was DAE, which I think was 1250 at that time.
Yeah.
Basically, it was just a promotional thing for the station, and they had Dumig over a mock Trent Dilfer grave because he used to kill Dilfer. I mean, relentlessly. It was hilarious, and it was all over him.
So he was standing over Dilfer's grave.
Yeah, it says like, yeah.
He had Dilfer's the date of his death.
Yeah,
And Dumig's standing over it. He's got an overcoat on, like it's wintertime, and he's standing over it, and he's like talking to the grave, and he said, "I didn't mean to be personal," or something of that nature.
That's a little macabre over there.
Yeah, it wouldn't fly today, but it was. It made a lot of waves.
So Father Dungy didn't like it.
Father Dungy didn't like it.
No. Any other memories, Ira, as far as Dumig breaking ground or personal memories?
Well, I never got to meet his family. Maybe you guys did. I never met his daughter.
Steve met his wife. I never met his daughter or his wife.
Boy, would he talk about his daughter in glowing terms.
Yeah.
He was so proud of her. Wasn't she in the medical field or something?
She's a doctor.
Yeah. So he used to tell the listeners, you know, as she was progressing through school and things.
She was always on the air.
Yeah, she was always on the air a couple times a year. Yep.
And then he got very much into the gambling shows, which it's not my cup of tea.
Yeah.
I don't know how big an audience it brought him. I don't know.
Enough that he kept talking about it.
But he'd bring in the guys from Vegas, the Todd Furmans of the world. If he brought on Todd Furman today, Todd Furman would tell him, 6.5, Steve. 6.5. Over under on the Bucks.
Over under.
Do you remember when he had to have lost this bet? Because he went on and on about this. I'm not talking about for a couple days or a couple weeks. Over a year is when Ohio State upset Miami in the Fiesta Bowl. And he went wild. He went absolutely wild.
Oh, man.
He must have lost his shirt on that game. He went wild.
He was a good athlete in his day and a heck of a golfer.
So, yeah.
I hear he was a 5 handicap. Now, my handicap is my golf swing. And I just played over the weekend with Todd Wright, Dave Worth, and Randy from Bay News 9. Charity tournament. Didn't cost me a dime over there, Steve. But you know what? I walked up to the front table, signed in, and the lady goes, you want to buy any mulligans? $5 a piece. I go, how many you got?
I'll take 50.
She cleaned me out, Steve. She cleaned me out.
I got a $200 bill in my pocket.
Todd Wright had a lot of good Dumig stories. They were close. Yeah, they were close.
All right, Sage, any parting Dumig thoughts as far as...
My parting Dumig words is if there's a service and I can be there, I plan on being there. And you know what? I'm not going to be surprised who shows up. And I'm talking about the Derrick Brookses of the world people like that because he made a big impact. Now, he was helped by one thing, and you got to acknowledge it. He had the power of the station. Strong, strong station. Mm-hmm. 50,000 watt power. But that alone doesn't keep you on for 25 years. You got to know what you're doing.
His wake will be a who's who of Tampa Bay. I'm very serious when I say that.
You might even have a Glazer show up.
I wouldn't be surprised if a Glazer shows up.
By the way, classy move by the Bucks. Classy move.
Yeah, it was. And immediately, too.
Immediately, yeah.
I would not be shocked if Bob Buckhorn made an appearance.
Nice.
I mean, it's going to be a who's who. It really will. Wouldn't be shocked if Stu Sternberg showed up.
You may get your man Raheem Morris back to town.
I'd be shocked if he isn't there.
There you go.
All right, Sage, get out of here, buddy. I hope everybody enjoyed Ira checking in with some of his perspective on Dumig and their time together, and just an interesting legacy that Dumig will have left on this sports market and fans for generations, really.
Well, you know what? I have one more Dumig story, and I forgot to say it in previous podcasts. And it involved, of all people, Chicago Billy, you know, the notorious sports radio caller. Well, and this is one of the funniest things I ever heard. Dumig at the time was doing a remote. I can't remember the name of the mall, but Pinellas Park. It's at US 19 and Park / Gandy. Well, at the time, it was Endor Mall. If you remember, also had a skating rink. You could play hockey on the skating rink. So Dumig was doing a remote there. Remember, Dumig, even though he's friends with Chicago Billy, they got into it one time on sports radio at one point, and Dumig had banned him from the show. Then stopped Chicago Billy from calling Dumig's college football shows and the golf show in particular, Dumig's Saturday morning golf show. At any rate, Billy was a notorious sports radio caller. He would call Sandy Penner. He would call Dan Cilio. Then he'd call Chris Thomas. Once in a while, he would call Rome. And then, you know, if Dumig would let him, he'd call Dumig. Well, and I was in Billy's office one time. Billy sat there with a radio station tuned to 620 right at his right hand. It was right there. I mean, he was addicted to local sports radio. Anyway, Billy obviously couldn't call Dumig. And so he called up one of the shows, whether it was Chris Thomas or Sandy Penner, said something that enraged Dumig. Well, Dumig gets on the air again. He's doing a remote. And he unloads on Billy in his monologue. Well, Billy's like hyper type A personality. Billy can't defend himself because he's banned from the show. So what happened was, this is before email was common and Wi-Fi was common. Dumig was, wherever his remote was, next door was an optometrist. You know, one of these shopping mall optometrists, you know, like yeah. Four eyes or whatever, three yeah. eyes. So he called the optometrist's office and like, hey, I'll give you $20. Can you deliver a fax for me? The guy's doing a remote next door. And the lady agreed. So he faxed a response. The lady delivered it to Dumig on the air. It's like breaking news, you know, like the old days, 1950s radio. We have breaking news. We're just in. So she delivers the facts. Dumig reads the facts and goes, you're wrong, Billy, and then loaded on him even more. So the Chicago Billy kept having to fax the optometrist office. And they were delivering facts to Dumig replies because Dumig wouldn't let him on the air. But Dumig would read the faxes.
It's a classic. I thought you were going to say he showed up because to the actual remote live.
That would have been funny.
But I think it's funnier.
You won't let me on the air. Just holler at him.
And I'm going to guess that the optometrist was not named Three Eyes. That wouldn't be a very good a very good name. All right. Now, Ira, of course, we'll be back for both podcasts next week. We'll be back at $1 next week as well. And I expect, you know, Ira's going to have a lot to say. I know he told me he was going to be talking to some people about the Sue deal. There were a couple of angles. And I'm curious, Lee, to see when Sue actually arrives. Because,
yeah, he's going to loaf till mandatory?
Mandatory minicamp is coming up. He was a guy who would often miss OTAs. And maybe he doesn't come in to sign his deal until close to mandatory minicamp. Because it hasn't been signed as of yet. And usually,
oh, just agreed upon.
Now,
as we speak.
Now, of course, they can FedEx stuff. But, you know, I don't know. I have a feeling he won't be on the field until mandatory minicamp and skip the rest of these OTAs. But it should be a bit of a spectacle. And, you know, Sue's a very nice guy as far
as. That's what's wild about Sue. Sue's a very intelligent guy.
Yeah.
Very nice guy. But you get him on the field, he loses his mind.
Yeah, and he also is very close with Gerald McCoy. I really want to ask Sue, how much did you talk to McCoy about playing here? Did he recommend it and all that stuff? Because they, a lot of these guys, Lee, when they're in the same draft class, they have a bond because they've been to the combine together. They've been to NFL premier events together and rookie symposiums. And Sue and McCoy did all that, and they also spent time together at the Pro Bowl. So I know they had a relationship. So thanks again to Ed Morris Cadillac Tampa and Ed Morris Cadillac Brandon. Memorial Day sales are going on, and they end at the end of the month. So get your shopping going at EdMorrisCadillacTampa.com, EdMorrisCadillacBrandon.com. Final thought, Lee?
My final thing to say is I know that Sue is very, very tight with Warren Buffett. and partially because he played football at Nebraska, and Buffett's like a honk, Nebraska honk. So somehow or another, maybe we can get Buffett. Buffett has a degree in journalism, I believe. He used to own some newspapers. Maybe we can enlighten him to new media and buy Joe Bucks fan.
There you go. And, you know, when you mention Nebraska, maybe Jason Light and his dad have an interesting tie to a Sioux that we might not even know about.
That's so, right. That's right.
That could be something there. Well, we will keep digging. And, hell, training camp's about 9 weeks away. So we'll get our T-shirts and get the hell out of here.